On Demand with Jenna Ellis. This is our AFR exclusive podcast where we do a deeper dive into the issues that you care about and the questions that you have for a lot of our very special guests, including today, lawmaker Representative Jim Jordan. Very excited to have you on the show today, Congressman Jordan, because we are all kind of looking at what President Trump is doing. The executive branch is just running, 100 miles an hour. They're getting so much done. Executive orders are flying. But the question I think that Americans have, and definitely some of our listeners have written in and asked about, is how prepared is Congress to actually backstop that and codify a lot of these really important conservative accountability and changes to the executive branch and to government agencies into law?
Yeah, well, we're gonna try to get all that done. But first of all, I think you're right. I've never seen a presidency start with this kind of intensity, this kind of pace, doing what he said he would do. I always say we make this job too complicated. It's pretty basic. What did you tell the folks you were going to do when you put your name on the ballot and ran for office? If you get elected, go do what you said. No one does that better than President Trump. So I've just never seen anything like the success right out of the blocks that we've seen now in 15 days. But you're right. Then we need to, he's done, I forget how many dozens and dozens and dozens of executive orders. And we need to give the resources for some of those orders when it comes to take the border issue and immigration. I think he's done over a dozen on just that issue alone. Those executive orders require resources to get them accomplished, to get them done. So we need to provide those resources. But in other cases, we're going to look to further change the law to accomplish those things. So all that's part of what we're working on. And then, of course, the big thing is what's called reconciliation, which I always tell folks is just a fancy term for a process that avoids having to get 60 votes in the Senate to get something passed. And so we're working on that as well.
Yeah, and that's incredibly important. All of this in terms of ensuring that these are enduring wins for the American people. And President Trump has a 54% approval rating. I think that's only going to climb. And so what are some of the first priorities that Congress is set to tackle?
Well, understand we've already got one piece of legislation passed, and it was an important piece of legislation which dealt with the immigration issue and the border security issue, but it was the Laken Riley Act. And we all know the tragic story of this migrant who had committed crimes, come here illegally, then had committed crimes, was out and did this terrible thing to Laken Riley. And we've seen her family. Her mom was so impressive at the bill signing a week ago. You can tell just a wonderful Christian woman who talked about her daughter and talked about what was taken. We had so many angel moms there, angel families there, who had lost a loved one because of some migrant who did some terrible thing. That bill didn't get passed last Congress, but it did this Congress. We had several Democrats who actually did the right thing and voted for it, and of course President Trump signed it. So there's already progress being made under President Trump's leadership in this new Congress on the border, on immigration. Not to mention what Tom Homan is doing, what's happening around the country, and then of course the recent announcements from both the President of Mexico and the Prime Minister of Canada saying that they're now going to help with the border situation, both northern and southern border, and the fentanyl crisis that's been there. That's all just, again, positive stuff that is exactly what President Trump talked about doing when 77 million people voted for him back on November 5th.
Yeah, and I think that the border and border security being a top priority for the administration and for Congress, and with the passage of the Laken Riley Act, I mean, that was a number one issue in the election. And so to prioritize that, I think, is fulfilling a promise. When we shift to some of these more negotiation tactics, perhaps like tariffs, there are some concerns, and I've had some guests even this week on radio talking about how there is a concern that tariffs ultimately will raise taxes for Americans that are already really struggling under high inflation and some of these things. Meanwhile, President Trump is talking about actually abolishing income tax. And so, a lot of these things can't really be done without the help of Congress. So where is Congress on some of those priorities in terms of allowing Americans to keep some of our own hard-earned dollars?
Well, you know, in reconciliation, we're looking to extend the tax cuts that were put in place 8 years ago. We think that's important. There are other tax breaks that the president mentioned during the campaign that we think are important, that he talked about, that the American people were part of their decision-making process when they voted on November 5th, like no tax on tips, like no tax on overtime, and other things the president talked about. So those are all under consideration as we move forward with this reconciliation package. It's not going to be easy, but we got to get it done because this is what the president campaigned on, what we campaigned on, and it's our chance to do what we told the voters we were going to do: secure the border, make sure taxes get lower, make sure we reform the permitting process so that we can better get the energy that we have here in our country, the oil and gas and coal that we have, to help that. Everyone knows when you have readily available energy at affordable cost, that's great for your economy. So all those are things we need to work on. And then, of course, what the president's really been doing is through Elon Musk's efforts with Doge to identify the inefficiencies and the waste in government. And then finally, something we worked on in our committee over the last Congress that we're seeing real progress on is making sure these agencies actually serve we the people and aren't weaponized against the taxpayers who they're supposed to serve like they were under Joe Biden. And you look at the nominees he's bringing forward, that he's the people he's nominated for these key agencies, they're good folks who we need. Pam Bondi just got confirmed. Pete Hegseth got confirmed. I think Todd Blanche, Kash Patel at the Justice Department will be great Deputy Attorney General and the FBI Director, respectively. All these are important. RFK Jr., Tulsi, we need them all to get confirmed because they're actually there to protect Americans' liberties, make sure these agencies serve the country, serve the people, and not be weaponized against us.
Yeah, so well said. And Congressman Jim Jordan, you served as the chair of the Weaponization of Government Committee during the Biden administration. And I think all Americans who were outraged and frustrated against the targeting of not only President Trump, but other American citizens, others who worked for Trump, like me, I was one of them as well. So I know this from a very personal experience. We were very frustrated with how the DOJ was attacking people for their political stances, and especially Christians and conservatives and Trump supporters. So where was kind of the wind down of that report, and now heading into the next Congress, maybe some legislation coming out of that?
Well, yeah, we think that some key legislation is, and what we're, I think, most proud of over the last 2 years is the work we did on stopping the censorship. Think about what a difference a few years makes. I mean, 4 years ago, President Trump was banned from all platforms. Today, he's on all of those platforms. He's back on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. He has his own platform. And, of course, he's president of the United States. A few years ago, Democrat members of Congress sent a letter to telecom companies, telecommunication companies, pressuring them to kick Fox and kick Newsmax off of the DirecTV package. Today, both are still on the DirecTV package. They're doing well, and I think Fox probably has more viewers than MSNBC and CNN combined. A few years ago, the White House was actively pressuring big tech to censor Americans. You don't have to take my word for it. Mark Zuckerberg wrote our committee a letter and said the Biden administration pressured us to censor. We did it. We're sorry. We won't do it again. And they've now, just 2 months ago, announced that they've changed their policies to get rid of the, quote, independent fact checker and go to a full embrace of the First Amendment. The best way to deal with false speech, wrong speech, stupid speech is to have more speech, not to have some independent liberal fact checker say, oh, we're going to take down that post. That's not how the First Amendment works. So we think we made a huge difference in that. But part of our work, and when Elon Musk did the Twitter files, we uncovered this fact that 51 former intel officials lied to the country just 2 weeks before the 2020 presidential election. And now what happened to those 51 former intel officials who said, we think the Hunter Biden laptop has all the markings of a Russian information operation? That was garbage. What happened to those guys? They all lost their security clearance a couple weeks ago when President Trump signed that executive order. So huge change has been made, I think. And we like to think Republicans on the Judiciary Committee had something to do with the changes that have been made in protection of the First Amendment. So we're looking at legislation that would help in that area as well, is one of the things we're focused on this Congress.
That's fantastic to hear, because I see people like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg now kind of, you know, coming back, Bill Gates and some of these who were vehemently opposed to President Trump. And, you know, we know all of what they did during the 2020 election and even during all of the COVID nonsense. And now suddenly, you know, they're reformed and want to work with Trump. I don't quite buy it to that extent. I think that they're kind of just playing partisan politics, depending on who's in the White House, because if Kamala Harris had been elected, we would see a very different Mark Zuckerberg. So how important is it to address, you know, some of these things for censorship and social media specifically? Because that's really the public square now, that we're not just relying on the goodwill of these tech bros.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, in October of 2022, when Elon Musk bought Twitter, that changed the game. And you know it changed the game because you saw the reaction from the left. Lina Khan sent a letter to Elon Musk when he started the Twitter files, and she said, "Who are the journalists you're talking to?" Think about this. You talk about an attack on the First Amendment. Government going to a business saying, "Who are the journalists you're talking to? We know you're talking to Taibbi and Schellenberger and Barry Weiss. We know you're talking to these. Who are the other journalists?" Like, that's crazy. Lina Khan harassed Elon because he said, "We're going to make Twitter a place where the First Amendment actually matters, not where we're doing the biddings of the Biden administration and censoring people." That fundamentally changed things. The Twitter files, and then what we were able to do on the committee is Elon Musk allowed the Twitter files to come out. Then through our subpoena power, deposition, investigative work, our oversight duties on the Judiciary Committee, we learned the same thing was happening at Amazon. The same thing was happening at Meta, Facebook. We learned it was all happening there through our investigation. And that was largely our report on censorship. And it's why we got the letter from Mr. Zuckerberg saying, "Yeah, they pressured us. Unfortunately, we did it. We're sorry. We're not going to do it again. And we've now changed our policies." So, but Elon Musk made a huge difference, And it doesn't stop there. This organization, GARM, a Global Alliance for Responsible Media, misnamed, was coordinating an effort with major advertisers to limit their ads on conservative platforms and websites and conservative outlets. Today, GARM is out of business. Climate Action 100 was coordinating an effort of financial institutions to collude to pressure companies to reduce their oil and gas emissions. Today, out of business. I mean, it just all because of our investigative work. So I really commend our team Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee.
And I commend you for your leadership on that. I know that our listeners are all really big fans of yours and are very thankful that you've been such a great leader on Capitol Hill with all of this. And we know, of course, that even though Republicans do have the trifecta, Democrats are not just going away quietly and going, well, we lost and, you know, oh, well. So they have, you know, come out and in recent days, you know, there was that expose of their, you know, secret agenda to be the opposition and all of that. Really, the threat is more in the Senate because of the filibuster and some of those things. So where do you see kind of the strategic potential pitfalls for Republicans as Democrats are likely going to do everything they can to stop the America First agenda?
No, they're going to fight back, but we got to remember the people spoke loud and clear. They gave Republicans the White House. We won key seats in the Senate, states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, where we picked up and were in the majority there, and we kept the House. Now, the biggest obstacle is in probably about a week, we're going to have a one vote majority in the House because Elise Stefanik is going to be going to the United Nations as our nominee there to represent us, represent the Trump administration there. And we're down to where if we lose one vote, if everyone's here, all the Democrats and all the Republicans are here in the House, we lose one vote, we can't pass something. So that's going to be the biggest obstacle. We're going to have to come together as a team. And one thing I said this 2 years ago, at the start of the last Congress, when I nominated then Speaker McCarthy, I said, any differences that exist in the Republican Party, any differences, and I use my colleague from Ohio, I use David Joyce, who's more moderate than me. I said, any difference between Joyce and Jordan are nothing, are minor, are minuscule compared to the differences between the Republicans and the left, which now controls the Democrat Party. And so we better keep that in mind, and we better figure out a way to stick together to get done what the American people elect us to do. And that's the attitude we have to have. And if we have that, I'm confident we're going to be able to get things done and help President Trump make America great again.
Absolutely. And, you know, there have even been some things that have been, I think, wildly exceeded some of the expectations even in the last 2 weeks. And that includes Trump even addressing the so-called birthright citizenship. And that's been a kind of some contention with even some on the right saying, you know, pointing out the 14th Amendment and saying, no, this absolutely goes against the Constitution. I don't think that that was at all what the framers and drafters of the 14th Amendment intended in Reconstruction. But you and other lawmakers, I think it was you, Chip Roy, and 16 other lawmakers filed amicus briefs in two of these lawsuits.
Yeah. You know, you're exactly right. And your argument is it's a common sense argument. Do you really think the folks who put together the 14th Amendment back in the aftermath of the Civil War and during the Civil War time frame, do you think they thought that if someone comes into our country illegally, not subject to the jurisdiction — it's a key term in the amicus brief — not subject to the jurisdiction of the country and the way that term was used at the time, and then one day later has a child, that child is now a citizen of the United States? That defies common sense, and so that is the heart of the argument that that I think the administration has. We filed this amicus brief because we think it's just good common sense that is not the intent of the folks who of the founders and the drafters and the people in both Congress, in the administration at the time when they put together the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, and that is the common sense argument. And a lot of what I see Trump doing and what hopefully the Republican conference will do in Congress is just the common sense thing. I mean, to lower taxes, to reduce the deficit, to ensure that the government isn't weaponized against American citizens, to have value and meaning in citizenship, which is the title of his executive order. I mean, all of these things are just common sense unless you have a different partisan agenda. And so let's talk about then the Republican side of this, because we know Democrats are going to be the opposition. How confident are you in the majority of Republicans and Speaker Johnson specifically to not lose any of the votes and to just say, well, who cares about the Democrat opposition? We can sufficiently marginalize them to just be in lockstep. And unlike what we saw under Speaker Paul Ryan in Donald Trump's first term, when Republicans last had the trifecta, we don't want that to happen again. So what's your confidence level in the Republican conference?
Well, I mean, it's high, but we've still got work to do. And, you know, we're in the midst of trying to put together this reconciliation legislation. And it's a multiple step process. You first have to have the budget committee pass a budget which outlines what each respective committee is going to do, what they're going to spend money on, and what they're going to try to save money on, or, you know, bring in revenue, and then it's revenue and outlays that each committee gets assigned. And so I know, for example, the Judiciary Committee, we're actually a committee that's going to be recommending we spend money, because it takes resources to secure the border. I mean, it takes agents, it takes judges, it takes attorneys to evaluate some of these claims and do the work. And on the border, it takes a wall, it takes drones, it takes cameras, it takes resources to handle all this. You need flights to take people back to repatriate in the country. You need detention space, detention beds. That all takes a lot of money. So we know in our committee there's going to be expenses that we're going to have to execute the orders of the executive branch. And so we're working on that. And then we're trying to get some revenue to help offset those costs. We think, actually, as an example, when someone comes and applies for asylum, there should be some kind of fee. You're applying to come to the greatest country ever. 84% of people who apply for asylum aren't legitimate, don't qualify under our law. We think if you have a fee, that's going to help with all that. So we're looking to do all that. So that's part of the second part of the process. And then finally, there's the final vote on the bill where it all comes back together in one big bill and you have a vote on it. So it's a real process, but the legislative process was never intended to be like simple and easy. Sometimes it gets a little messy, but it's the way our great system, what did Churchill say? Democracy is the worst form of government there is, except for all the others. And so we got the best system, but it gets a little messy. But we're just going to have to work through it and get done what we told the people we're going to do.
Yeah, and just continue to hammer it out. Well, I know that our American Family radio audience really wants to know where we're at on pro-life as well, because we've seen, thankfully, President Trump, Vice President Vance standing very firmly for pro-life. That has, of course, encouraged the states. Where is Congress at in terms of pro-life priorities?
Well, one of the things we want to work on is this this issue with the FACE Act, and work closely with the Justice Department, because we think the FACE Act has been used to go after pro-life activists who, you know, we use the example of Ava Edel, the I think 88-year-old lady in I believe in Tennessee area, who was actually arrested, prosecuted for praying in front of an abortion clinic, and scheduled to go to prison. Now she's been received a pardon from the president, but that's what the Biden administration Justice Department, the Garland Justice Department, did to Ava Edel. And she was a lady who was, as a kid, was in a Yugoslavian concentration camp. Wonderful lady, understands the sanctity of life. So we think the way the Justice Department in the Biden administration enforced the FACE Act, which is an act designed to allow people to have access to clinics, but what we've seen is supposed to be applied both ways. In other words, we saw in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision, particularly the leak of the Dobbs opinion, we saw hundreds of crisis pregnancy centers and churches be attacked by the left, by the pro-abortion folks out there, and very little prosecution there. But on the handful of places where, like Mark Houck, him and his family are praying in front of an abortion clinic, some crazy person comes up and threatens and swears at his son, and Mark Houck does what any dad would do, defends his son. Mark Houck got prosecuted, and of course the jury found him not guilty. So that's one of the areas we're looking at, we think is important. We've had some members of our committee who've been really adamant about making sure the FACE Act is done the way it's supposed to be. Some even think we should get rid of it. But so that's one of the areas the Judiciary Committee is focused on.
That's amazing. And I think for the pro-life community overall, and for advocates of truth and life, that comes as welcome news, definitely. And in just the last 2 minutes I have with you, Congressman Jordan, and I so appreciate your time that you know, we can hear a little more in all of these areas. Is there anything else going on that maybe the media just hasn't paid attention to? Because it seems like, you know, there's so many headlines, it's really hard to keep track. I think that's intentional from the Trump administration, which is a good thing. It's like just confuse and distract and get a lot of things done so they can't just harp on, you know, one thing. Is there anything else that our audience in particular should know is happening or maybe not happening in Washington?
No, I think we've covered it. I do think the work that President Trump is doing through Mr. Musk and the Doge effort is really important. Because we've always talked about, you know, the stupid things that the bureaucracy spends your money on, and us conservatives always been about, you know, we've always been about like reducing the size and scope of government. But sometimes you need someone who's just laser focused on pointing out how ridiculous some of this stuff is. The USAID, you know, is in the news a lot now, but the crazy things they're spending money. What was it? Some like. What was the example? Some transgender opera in Ireland. They spent thousands of taxpayers. Like, what is that? Like,
insane.
What? You know, we've always heard about the $100 hammer and the $90 toilet seat and all the stuff you heard about in government waste. But this is just like dumb. And so the fact that Elon Musk is like going through and pointing that out, I think, is really important. As we try to make government actually serve we the people instead of wasting our money and attacking us.
Yeah, how do things like that even get funded without knowledge of Congress? I mean, is this just the result of these giant spending omnibus packages that aren't line itemed?
Well, my understanding is with USAID, this was created by executive order back in the, I think it was JFK. And it was designed to help in sort of international relations, and what now the Trump administration is saying is, no, we want this taken over by the Secretary of State. We want to We want this sub-agency, we want it more accountable to the person who was elected by we the people, i.e. the chief executive of the country, the president of the United States. We want that to flow through his nominee, who's been confirmed by the Senate, Secretary Rubio. And that makes sense to, I think, most Americans. Like, yeah, that makes sense. That's how it should be. Why do we allow this to happen and function like this for so long? So that's really what's going on. And of course, the left is like, oh, this is terrible. This is unconstitutional. No, it's not. This is accountability to the person who was elected by we the people.
Yeah, I mean, how would an agency that's created by executive order just have basically a blank check to write? And I think even USAID is a misnomer. It's basically a slush fund that is just spending wildly without any sort of accountability. I mean, the funds still have to come from Congress, right?
Right, right. Sure do. Have to be appropriated. And it's money appropriated to the State Department. My understanding is money appropriated to the State Department, and then that goes to these sub agencies. And we're digging into that just like Elon Musk is with the Doge effort. I know because of my committee assignments and you know, judiciary and oversight, we spend more time on the Justice Department than the folks by comparison, people on the Foreign Affairs Committee would be more focused on what's happening in this particular agency. So, but I do think what they're pointing out with USAID is really important for the country to understand.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman Jim Jordan, I really appreciate your time this morning and doing this deep dive, and it'll be really fascinating. We're only 2 weeks in, so that's what's exciting, to see how much more of this bloat and gut from the federal government is actually, we have light shed on it, and we can maybe rein in government and drain the swamp and do all the things that the first Trump administration promised to do and now has a very clear mandate from the American people. So thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you. Take care, Jenna.
All right. Well, thanks to Congressman Jordan for this deep dive here on Demand. And as always, if you have a question for us to do a deep dive in or a guest suggestion, you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. And make sure that you are subscribing and listening each and every Friday to On Demand so that you can get the news you need to know from a biblical worldview perspective.